Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, September 14th, 2016, episode 12.08, the Week 2 Preview Show. Week 1 is over, and it was a week of close games. There were four games decided by 1 point, and half the games were decided by 4 points or less. Only three teams won by double digits, so I guess the NFL has finally reached what it's always wanted, parity. Jack Del Rio shows some big old hairy cojones. The Chargers blow a huge lead and lose a key player. And the Rams took us all back to the 80s. Oy vey. Plus, I'll talk on how I'm going to be enjoying Mike Zimmer this week as he toys with the media and his opponents. I'll cover some of week one news in the NFL. And I will also answer some questions from our executive producer in the executive producer segment. And I'm getting my picks this week up against Rico Stone as I cover all 16 Week 2 games. Lots to talk about, so let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. All right, I'm going to get in it. This is how I'm going to be doing the show throughout the rest of the regular season. I'm going to take a few minutes in the beginning of the show to kind of recap the previous weekend. Of course, this week we'll talk about some of the things that happened in week one in the National Football League. I'll then answer some executive producer questions and then get to of course, the week two games, the upcoming week's games, give you my predictions and put my picks up against some of you fans. This week, it's Rico Stone. Good luck to him. But before I get going, I have to give my executive producer, Jeremy Parker, who put his life and his name, his name on the line for the fans. He will be putting up his body up for the fans because I am going to win the challenge game. Even though he won the first one, so this is for you, Jeremy Parker.
I am the smartest man alive!
He did very well in his picks against me. We differed on four games. He won three of them. I only won one. I had the Vikings. He had Tennessee. And that's the only one that came through for me. He had the Ravens while I had the Bills. And Buffalo, oh my God, thanks for disappointing me so thoroughly. Your offense looked horrendous. That's right, horrendous. Then he took the Giants. I took the Cowboys. Look, man, I don't feel bad losing by 1 point to a team that has a quarterback that has been to the Super Bowl and won two Super Bowls. I had a rookie quarterback, and we held our own. I'm going to be all right with that mistake there. But the big one was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going into Atlanta, a division rival. He had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I had the Atlanta Falcons. Tampa Bay had a huge lead. They hold on to win by 7, 31-24. So that makes Jeremy the smartest man alive. In Atlanta, I am done with you. There is no more excuses. You have far too much talent to be losing football games at home. I don't know what it is about that stadium, but the Atlanta Falcons just cannot win at home, and that is pretty ridiculous to start the season with a home loss to a divisional opponent. I'm done with the Atlanta Falcons. There's nothing else I can say other than that team is completely disappointing, and they are looking at a very, very long season. I do not anticipate the Falcons getting anywhere near the postseason. So we'll start on Thursday Night Football with the Carolina Panthers travel to Denver to face the Broncos. We both missed this game. We both had the Carolina Panthers, one of those one-pointers that I was talking about, a Denver Bronco one-point win. The Carolina Panthers missed it was a pretty far field goal at the end of the game to lose that one. Gunno when he kicked his, I think it was like a 56-yard or 57-yard or something like that. And he missed it and caused the Panthers the loss in Denver. Denver gets the 1-0. They're the defending Super Bowl champions. I think everybody thinks that everything is now all right with the world and the Denver Broncos? I say not so fast. The league has come out and actually fined two Denver Broncos for their hits on Cam Newton. Both Stewart and Marshall were fined for helmet-to-helmet hits on Cam Newton. Cam so much so as saying that it's his job to win football games, not to lobby for his health, which was pretty good of Cam Newton to say that. But he did take some brutal hits in that game. Now, I'm going to briefly kind of sidestep just to something that's happening in the news right now. The National Football League gave $100 million. That's right, to an already $100 million that they were already giving to the Play Smart, Play Safe campaign. This $100 million pledge is so that they can help medical research, independent medical research, and engineering advancements for the game so that they can help player safety take a better forefront within their organization. And I'm all good. Look, I applaud them. Anytime you give that much money to a cause, you have to hat tip them. They're doing a good job. This whole Play Smart, Play Safe campaign wants to help with the progress of prevention and diagnosis and treatment of head injuries. They want to enhance medical protocols. That is great. That is fantastic. But you know what, NFL? You have to do something with your product on the field. I saw five helmet-to-helmet hits of Cam Newton. Five of them. Not once did your officials do anything to make sure that Cam Newton was okay. Your independent spotters that are supposed to be at every football game, not a single one of them said, hey, we need to pull Cam Newton out of this game and go through the concussion protocol test to make sure that he hasn't been concussed. That didn't happen. Finally, the last one, he got a flag for roughing the passer. But it was offset because they said the pass he threw didn't get to the line of scrimmage. Well, you know what? When you're getting decapitated, it's a little hard to throw the football where it needs to go. All right? So I think maybe that offsetting penalty shouldn't have been offset. But that's just me. I like what Cam's saying. Cam's saying, hey, let the refs ref. I'm going to play football. But if the league, who is giving it's $200 million that they're doing to this medical research and neuroscience research. That's great, but you got to protect the players that are on the football field right now, and I don't think that's happening. I think it was, I'll go back to Super Bowl 2 years ago when Julian Edelman, playing the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl in Arizona, literally legs buckled, walking around like he wasn't sure where he was, and nobody took him out of that game. Yes, I know it's the Super Bowl, but you know what? If you're all about play safe, play smart, that's not safe and smart, NFL. What happened to Cam Newton on Thursday Night Football was not safe. It was not smart. He should have been taken out and evaluated. I know people say, but it's the final 45 seconds of the game. How are you going to take my starting quarterback out? Look, I'll go back to a story. Troy Aikman, I was at this game, on the sidelines. Troy Aikman throws a touchdown pass one play after he suffered a concussion. He got smacked so hard, he doesn't even remember calling the play in the huddle. Gets up, throws a touchdown pass to Michael Irvin, walks out to the sideline, and he asks his coaches what he was doing. What am I doing here? That's how bad it was for Troy Aikman. And Troy Aikman retired from the league, not because of the concussions. He had some back problems, and that's why he left the league. But still, that guy suffered a lot of concussions, and I just don't know. That was, 20 years ago Troy Aikman was playing in the league? And the league has yet to do something. They keep saying all the right things. They keep saying, we're putting all of these things in place. We're going to have these independent neurological doctors on the sideline and these spotters. If there's helmet-to-helmet contact, we're going to go and we're going to talk to that player and we're going to make sure that he goes through this procedure to make sure that he is all right. That's not happening in the league. From what I saw this weekend, I don't see any of that happening. Cam Newton continuing to play after he took that shot and that personal roughing the passer penalty, still getting in there and calling his plays and running the plays for his team. Just don't think that that is acceptable. So I applaud you for the putting up and pledging the $100 million to play smart, play safe. But you need to do something about the players on the football field right now, because you are not helping them currently as the situation is. I don't know what it is. In college football, they have the targeting rule. You know, a defensive player comes at any player, not just a quarterback, but any player, and targets their helmet, they get ejected from the game. And maybe that's what the NFL needs to do. Until they get serious about penalizing guys during the play on the football field, guys are going to keep doing it. Because what are they doing right now? They find Marshall and Stewart. They find them. I don't even know how much they find them. I think they find them the equivalent of maybe like $20 to me. I don't have the information of how much they got fined. But I know they do that. I do know they got fined. But still, Damian Stewart, Brandon Marshall, and Marshall even himself suffered a concussion because of the helmet-to-helmet hit. It's not enough. What the NFL is doing is not enough. And until they either start ejecting players from the game immediately as it happens, or better yet, suspend a player for a game. You went helmet-to-helmet. You don't get to play the next game. That's it, period. I don't care what your intent was. I don't care if you were aiming for the chest and the quarterback went down and you hit him in the head. You make contact with another player in the head, helmet to helmet, you're out the next game. I don't care if you're the superstar. I don't care if you're J.J. Watt or you're the third string defensive end. You hit somebody else with the crown of your helmet and you hit them in the helmet, you are out the next game, and that is it. And until the league gets serious and starts doing that, people are going to keep going headhunting. I'm going to keep going headhunting because, look, I can pay the $15,000 fine, because that's what it is. When a player gets fined $15,000, it's like me getting fined $20. I could come up with $20 pretty easily, all right? And these players, they can come up with a $15,000 fine, and you know what? It's going to charity. All right, it's cool. I will hit a quarterback and try to knock out your number one quarterback by headhunting if all I'm going to do is draw a 15-yard penalty and maybe if the league decides to fine me. Because they only fined two guys. There were five hits of Cam Newton helmet to helmet. Five. Only two guys are getting fined. League, you got to do better than that, man. You have got to do better than that. How quickly I jumped off the games, right? All right, and that was just the first one. Anyways, let's get to Sunday. We already talked about the Falcons totally blowing it at home and making me look really bad and making Jeremy Parker.
I am the smartest man alive.
Yeah. Enjoy that one, Jeremy. That's the last one you're getting this year. The Vikings and the Tennessee Titans. Minnesota goes to Tennessee and without their star quarterback, find a way to get a win because of their defense that just came and balled out. The defense was phenomenal, scoring two touchdowns for Minnesota and giving the Tennessee Titans a loss at home, the first of the season, the final there, 25-16. The Cleveland Browns, well, they're the Cleveland Browns, and they traveled to Philadelphia to face the Philadelphia Eagles. Maybe the Eagles' demise, not so much. Of course, it was just the Cleveland Browns and RG3, the starting quarterback, who everybody was like, hey, let's see what RG3 got. He runs out of the end zone, runs and tries to get out of bounds, and oh my God, RG3, for the love of Pete, can you not avoid contact? For once, avoid the contact. He couldn't do that. Takes a hit straight on. Broken collarbone or bone in the shoulder. And now he's been placed on IR. And he will be gone for at least, I think they say, 8 to 10 weeks. He'll be reevaluated again in 4 weeks. So that's not good for Cleveland. That means it's McCown time. Offense didn't look all that spectacular. And they lose 29 to 10. Give it up to Carson Wentz, the rookie quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. He looked very good, and the Eagles at least did not look like they were mired and stuck in mud like they were under Chip Kelly. The Jets and Bengals played one of those one-point games, and Cincinnati and the Jets, they went back and forth, back and forth, and the Bengals got away with a 23-22 victory. Jets don't look as bad as everyone thought they were going to be. Bengals don't look as good. Offensively, they looked fantastic. They look really good offensively. Defensively, that Bengals defense was a shade of the Bengals defense that they were a year ago. The Jets were gashing them, and they looked really, really good moving the football against the Cincinnati Bengals, something that I didn't think the Jets would be able to do. Cincinnati needs to clean up that defense if they're going to want to compete in the AFC North. Next up for Cincinnati, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they were looking bad, bad, bad themselves as they crushed the Washington Redskins 38-16 on Monday night, the first of the Monday night doubleheader. And I'm going to actually take these two games and I'm going to combine a little segment here. Everybody's talking about Darrelle Revis getting burned by A.J. Green, and maybe we've seen the demise of Revis. And then in the other game, the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Washington Redskins, everybody's saying, Josh Norman, how can you call yourself the best if you don't even line up against the best? Because Josh Norman wasn't lining up against Antonio Brown, the Steelers' wide receiver that torched Breland over on the left side twice in that football game for long touchdowns. Look, for all you people saying Josh Norman isn't a great cornerback, here's the deal. Antonio Brown only made not even one catch. He didn't make any catch. He caught it, and then he stripped it out, and they called it an incomplete pass. He didn't make any catches when he went over to Josh Norman's side. Now, people saying, why doesn't Josh Norman follow Antonio Brown wherever he goes? That's not Josh Norman's call. That's not his job. If you want to get angry at anybody, get angry at Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator. Get angry at Jay Gruden. Because, look, if I'm the head coach and my corner gets burned by the best wide receiver of my opponent, I'm going to go to my defensive coordinator. I'm going to be like, yo, why is not my best corner, Josh Norman, the guy who we paid all this money to, not covering Antonio Brown all over the field? Please, can you explain that to me? Why is that not happening? Now, maybe the Washington Redskins didn't have time to implement a defensive package that switches and moves where you have Josh Norman cover the opposing team's best wide receiver. I understand that. So get angry with Jay Gruden and Joe Barry. They did not put Josh Norman in the best position possible. That's not Josh Norman's fault. When AB went over to Norman's side, Norman did a great job covering him, okay? There weren't very many completions over there. But Antonio Brown moved around. The Pittsburgh Steelers were smart. Hey, look, they're not making Josh Norman cover Antonio Brown all over the points. Huh, I think we maybe need to exploit that. Let's move him over there. Oh, look, and they're going to play him one-on-one. How cute. They're going to play him one-on-one with Breland. Let's go over there. Oh, that's a touchdown. Oh, wait, that's a touchdown again. So, everybody ease up on Darrelle Revis. That's one game. A.J. Green is a very, very good receiver. I've had the pleasure of meeting that cat, stand right next to him. I know how good he is. So let's ease up on Darrelle Revis. Let's give him a couple more weeks to see if, in fact, he has lost a step and no longer a good cover corner. And as far as Josh Norman is concerned, maybe let's see if the Washington Redskins and his defensive coordinator and head coach can come up with a plan to make sure that he moves all over the field regardless of where the other team's best receiver goes. Because I'm going to tell you what, they got the Dallas Cowboys this week, and if first play of the game, I'm going to send Dez Bryant at Josh Norman. Put him on the right side. Norman's going to cover him. Okay, second play of the game, I'm going to move Dez Bryant over to the other side, and I'm going to see if Josh Norman follows him. Guess what? If Josh Norman doesn't go to the left side and match up on Dez Bryant, I'm going to keep Dez Bryant on the left side all day long, and I'm going to challenge Breland all day long. That's exactly what I'm doing, and make the Washington Redskins change something with Josh Norman. Jay Gruden and Joe Barry, you got your work cut out for you, because if you guys think that Antonio Brown was really good and special, and he is, you got Dez Bryant up next, And he's an angry Dez Bryant who only got one catch because they only threw his way four times last week. I can guarantee you they are going to throw to Dez Bryant more than four times this week. This I guarantee. All right? I'm telling you right now, this is a guarantee.
This I guarantee.
The Dallas Cowboys are going to throw more than four passes to Dez Bryant, especially if Josh Norman doesn't cover him all over the field. So there's my little rant on that. A couple other games, the New Orleans Saints and the Oakland Raiders. Oh, the Saints had this game in the bag. But once again, they got no defense, people. They got no defense. They let a little rookie undrafted running back run for 75 yards and a touchdown on his first carry. They let Derek Carr throw it all over the place to Crabtree and Amari Cooper. And Cooper was fat, boy. Over 160 yards receiving. And then here come the Raiders. They score the tying touchdown. But wait a minute. It's 34-33. We kick the extra point. And we go to overtime because there's only like, I don't know, 40 seconds left. No. Coach Jack Del Rio says, go for two. Let's win it here because we came to win football. And what do? You play to win the game. That's right, Herb. What do? You play to win the game. And they go for two. Carr throws it to Michael Crabtree. Touchdown. Oh, my God. Delicious. 35-34 victory for the Oakland Raiders. Now, here comes my second rant. My rant is on the personal foul, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that Crabtree received after scoring that two-point conversion and giving the Raiders a one-point lead. He catches it. He gets tackled. He holds on to the ball. He stands up, and he throws the ball straight back up into the air. Now, it's a two-point conversion. It's a dead ball. He didn't throw it into the stands because he's thrown it into the stands. That's a penalty. You're not supposed to throw it into the stands anymore. But he didn't do that. He just threw the football and he threw it straight up into the air. A good, I don't know, 10 feet. And that was worthy of a penalty for excessive celebration? Come on, NFL. You got Victor Cruz salsa dancing and other players twerking and jerking. And you got all kinds of stuff happening in the end zone. And Michael Crabtree, all he did was throw the ball up into the air, and that's worth 15-yard penalties? Look, here you are, No Fun League, because this is what you've done, NFL, make it No Fun League. You either start penalizing anybody who does anything crazy in the end zone, or you let some of these slide. That was not penalty-worthy, what Michael Crabtree did. He had just done something that was uncalled for, that you've never seen in the NFL. A team went for two, and he actually got it. And you know what? You get a little happy when you do something like that. Something that's unexpected, and it actually works out for you. He throws the ball up in the air, and that's two. And now we've got a one-point lead. And you're going to give him a 15-yard penalty for that? That was worthy of you possibly altering the outcome of this football game? Because here's what happened. It got penalized on the kickoff. Fortunately, the Raiders have Sebastian Janikowski. They have to kick 15 yards further away. It did not alter the outcome because he still got a good kick and they had good coverage. And the Saints had to start their drive from about their 23-yard line. So it didn't matter where the ball wound up. Okay, so that penalty didn't what became irrelevant. But had it been another team, had it been another kicker, had it not been Janikowski who kicks the ball 75 yards, it could potentially have changed the outcome of that football game. Fortunately, it didn't. Raiders still won. Makes me happy because I had the cojones to pick that upset, and it came through. So good on Oakland. Good on Del Rio for showing the hairy cojones and going for it. That is a strong coaching move that I would say 90% of the coaches in the league would not have made. And as a matter of fact, to date, since the two-point conversion has become a reality, I think I've only seen that two other times. And the two-point conversion has been around in the NFL for a very long time. I've only seen it twice. The Jacksonville Jaguars did it. And I think the Green Bay Packers were the other team who've done it. That's just some good football. I like what he did. We're here on the road. We don't want to go to overtime. We haven't been able to stop Drew Brees. Let's get it done right now. Good for him. All right, the Bills, as I said, God, man, that was just ugly. The Texans and Brock Osweiler, huh? Touchdown pass to D-Hop, looking pretty good there. Green Bay Packers, I don't like that. Maybe it was the heat in Jacksonville because apparently it was extremely hot in Jacksonville. Let the Jaguars get back into this game, hung around. Oh, man. How about sneaking a game? Oh, tricky, tricky Seattle Seahawks. 2-point win over the Miami Dolphins, 12-10. And all I have to say to the Miami Dolphins is, get Kenny Still some new gloves. Wide open. Nobody around him for 15 yards. Tannehill puts the ball right in his hands, and he drops it. A sure touchdown. Dropped it, uncontested, nobody around him, and that would have sealed the deal for Miami. Instead, Seattle was able to score a touchdown late to win 12-2, much to the very happiness of about 60% of survivor pool players, as most everybody had Seattle to win that game, and they came up with the win. Giants, Cowboys, Giants survive. Dak Prescott rookie debut with a 1-point win, mostly because Terrence Williams had a brain fart and decided that he was going to run for another 6 yards instead of get out of bounds and let Dan Bailey, who had been kicking beautifully, by the way, and had already made a 54-yarder and a 56-yarder, he took his chance for maybe trying a 60-yarder that he probably would have made, by the way. But we'll never know because Terrence Williams decides to run inbounds and run out the clock. Unreal. Just unreal. Lions and Colts, they played a seesaw game back and forth, and when it looked like Prater had lost the game for the Lions by missing an extra point, he comes back to nail one at the end of regulation and give them the win over Indianapolis in Indianapolis. Colts, Andrew Luck looked like he's back, threw for 4 touchdown passes, 3 to tight ends, 1 to Moncrief, and he looks good. He looked good. They just have to figure out what to do something with their defense because their defense couldn't stop anybody. Sunday Night Football, the New England Patriots took care of business. No Gronkowski, no Tom Brady, no Deion Lewis, no problem. Oh, my goodness, how did they do it? They get a 23-21 win on Sunday Night Football against the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals had a chance to win it, but their kicker, Contazero, missed a 47-yard field goal at the end of regulation to ensure that New England Patriots get a win. I don't know how Belichick does it. He probably wasted a good 20, 25 seconds before calling the timeout there. Look, the Cardinals had gone into field goal range, clock ticking, and you would think that, you know, the Cardinals are lining up, and he calls a timeout because it's a 47-yarder. This kicker's going to make it. They're going to go up 24-23. I got to leave some time on the clock for Garoppolo. Instead, he lets the clock tick down. He calls a timeout after about 20 to 25 seconds have elapsed, and then they line up for the kick for the field goal. Here's the thing. Any other coach does that, and people are saying, oh, this is just horrible clock management. It's just not good. It's not good to just let all that time waste. You got to leave some time for your offense to try to match this field goal here. And then the Cardinals line up, and he misses the kick, and it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Even when he coaches and he does something wrong, it still works out for him. That's just the way it is. Oh, my goodness. 23-21 victory for New England. I think the Patriots are going to be all right. The only team in the AFC East to win a game. Bills lost. Jets lost. Miami Dolphins played pretty good football. They were on the road in the Pacific Northwest, but at the end of the day, lost. Oh, man, it's going to be interesting to see the AFC East play out this season. 23-21 final. Then the last game I'll talk about, the Rams at the 49ers. I don't even know what to say about Los Angeles. That is how bad that game was. I stayed to the bitter end. I don't know why. Call me crazy. But I was there till the clock said 0-0-0. 28-0 was the final score there. San Francisco torched Los Angeles, making it look like it was we were back in the 80s, and the Niners were always whooping up on the Rams. Do you remember that? 80s, early 90s. San Francisco beating up Los Angeles. That's what it looked like. Todd Gurley couldn't do anything. Offensively, the Rams looked stale. When it was 14-0 at halftime, you pretty much figured this game is over because there's no way the Rams are going to do anything offensively, and they just couldn't. They just couldn't. Jeff Fisher, to quote Jeff Fisher there, that I think I even put it on Twitter for those of you who are following on Twitter. And if you're not, get out there, NFL R&R. Make sure you check it out. We are on Twitter. But to quote Jeff Fisher, the head coach from the Rams during Hard Knocks, that was some 7-9 bull right there. Okay? That is exactly what it was. Aaron Donald, big defensive end, who's the best player on the defense, gets ejected just because the frustration came over him. Case Keenum couldn't do anything. Look, Todd Gurley is not going to run the football effectively if the defense is not afraid of your quarterback. They're just not afraid. They're not scared. Okay? They're not scared. I'm not scared of Case Keenum. Okay? Which led me to this question. How bad has Jared Goff been that Case Keenum was the best quarterback the Rams had to offer on Monday night? How bad's Goff? How could he have been any worse? Throw the rookie out there. Let's see what he can do. Maybe he learns after a few games and it starts getting better because he could not have been any worse. That's how bad Case Keenum was, that you could have thrown anybody in there and it couldn't have been any worse. Just couldn't have been. 28-0. Not a good start for the franchise back in Los Angeles. That would be the Rams. All right, let's get to some NFL news before we start making picks for week two. So here we go, some NFL news. All right, the big news right now is Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, who says, not only am I not going to tell you, the media, who's starting Sunday night at quarterback versus the Green Bay Packers, I may not even tell my team who's starting Sunday night at quarterback versus the Green Bay Packers. And so as I heard that he was doing this, I thought of this.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them. If you don't know what that's from Dodgeball. Check it out. Very funny movie. Very funny movie. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. There you go. Mike Zimmer toying with the media. I'm not even going to tell my team who's starting Sunday night. Oh, that's good. You know that the Cleveland Browns, as I said earlier, have placed RG3 on IR. They're going to reevaluate him in 3 to 4 weeks to see if he can come back. But that just, you know what, it hurts. I wanted to see maybe a glimpse of RG3 from his rookie season, but he's got to learn how to not take hits. That hit was on him. He could have slid. He could have stepped out of bounds 3 yards earlier. There were lots of ways he could have avoided that contact, and he did not. So that really is on him. The Hall of Fame has announced the finalists. There are 94 finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame coming up. Of those 94 finalists, some modern-day players were announced, and those names that are first year eligibility include running back LaDainian Tomlinson, wide receiver Hines Ward, quarterback Donovan McNabb, defensive end Jason Taylor. Just some of the finalists from the modern day who might get inducted into Canton. Definitely the first-year eligibility for LaDainian Tomlinson. I think he might be able to get in. Chad Ochocinco, or as they have him on the list, Chad Johnson, is also eligible for the first time. And I'm not sure, Chad. You know what? It's interesting because Chad Johnson, you know, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, not the Pro Football Hall of Stats. Okay, because Chad Johnson doesn't have the greatest stats, and he wasn't on the greatest teams. But when you talk about wide receivers in the modern era, you can't really not mention Chad Ochocinco. He was the first diva, if you will, as far as wide receiver divas are concerned. So I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think that eventually Chad Johnson will make it into the Hall of Fame. Some other notable players on that Hall of Fame list: Kurt Warner, still on there, Terrell Davis, Terrell Owens, John Lynch, and Air Don Coryell. Don Coryell is still on the list. 94 candidates, they will be reduced to 25 semifinalists in November, and then it'll come down to 15 finalists in January. So that's the list. It's available. Go out there and check it out. Let's get, before we get to the week two, I'm going to answer the executive producer questions. So let's get to the producer segment. All right. So in the executive producer segment, first of all, he wants everyone to know he's very happy that the Niners won, even though he didn't take him. He didn't take him, but he's very happy. And so he asks, were the Niners better than I've hoped for, or were they just fortunate to play an inept team? And I think, Jeremy, it goes both ways. One, the 49ers are going to be a little better than we all anticipated. Okay? It still wasn't a great game by any stretch of the imagination. It wasn't fantastic, but they did some good things. They ran the football well. Carlos Hyde looked really good. If Carlo can stay healthy and run the football like he did against the Rams, 49ers are going to have a chance. They need better play from Blaine Gabbert, okay, because he just flat out missed some throws and he looked pretty bad, so he's going to have to step it up a bit. But you were very fortunate that you played a very bad football club right now. Not at all what I expected from the Los Angeles Rams. Now, it's week one, and I don't want to over-exaggerate, and I don't want to overreact, because people tend to overreact after week one. It's just one football game. What I want to see now, here comes week two. It's going to be your home opener for the Rams. You've got the Seattle Seahawks, another division opponent. You usually play Seattle very tough. Are you going to bounce back, or are you going to give me more of the same? If they give me more of the same, whoo, it's going to be a long, long season in Los Angeles. But if they bounce back, they get it together and play Seattle a lot better, it'll be better for the Rams. But I think your Niners are going to be just fine. They still aren't playoff contenders, but they're going to play hard football. That I guarantee you. What was I most surprised about week one of the season? I'm not going to lie. I was surprised by the Lions. For the Lions to go out there and put up that many points the way they did, and they seemed very comfortable both on the offense and defensive side of the ball. And to go on the road and put up 39 points, I know the Indianapolis Colts don't have the fiercest defense in the NFL, but still, you're on the road, nobody expects much of you, and you put up 39 points on the road. That's impressive. Okay, I don't care who you are, that is impressive. Oh, and by the way, those 39 points, most points any team scored. They were the highest scoring team in the NFL in week one, the Detroit Lions. I don't think anybody, I don't even think Detroit Lions fans gave the Lions that shot, that thought that the Lions were going to score the most points in the week. So that's pretty impressive. I was very impressed with the Detroit Lions. Once again, I'm not going to overreact. I want to see how the Lions continue. Can they keep this up offensively? Defensively, they struggled near the end, especially once the Colts got into that hurry-up offense. They struggled there, but I want to see if the Lions can keep putting up points, can keep going, and keep winning football games. That definitely was something that surprised me. And obviously, Del Rio. He's an old school coach. For him to go for it, go for two instead of the tie, that was a little surprising. It worked out. What would people have said about him and the Oakland Raiders had they not gotten the two-point conversion? Right now, everybody's praising him. Yeah, it worked. They won the football game. It worked. They had the proper play. They isolated Crabtree one-on-one. Perfect pass from Carr, and it worked, and they won the football game. What if he dropped the ball? Or what if he just got a bad pass? Or what if the defender knocked it out of his hands? Then what, people said? Then the Oakland Raiders lose 34-33. Then what do you got? So it's going to be something to watch as the season continues, how the Oakland Raiders are going to play games out. Which team should you be most worried about? Well, definitely the Rams. I mean, when you don't score any points, that's not good. And especially if you didn't score any points, but like, let's say you moved the ball well and you had turnovers in the red zone, or you were getting close to scoring and there was a fumble. Yeah, the Rams didn't even have any of that. They didn't spend hardly any time in the San Francisco side of the field. That was just very, very disappointing. So there's cause for concern because Gurley could never get going and Case Keenum was a hot mess. Same thing goes for the Buffalo Bills. 7 points against a Baltimore Ravens defense that I don't believe is that good. And you can only muster a single touchdown. Tyrod Taylor didn't look comfortable. And the Bears and the Bills offense looked out of sync all game long. That is definitely something to have Bills fans worried. Which team offered hope for their season? Well, I think here are some teams that people weren't going to expect much of. The Jacksonville Jaguars held their own against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Look for the Jags to make some noise this year. Okay, I think that the Minnesota Vikings, with the way their defense played, shows we're going to keep our team in a lot of football games. Even if we don't have Teddy Bridgewater as a quarterback, we're going to come to play, and we're going to come to play hard. And then you actually have to look at the Miami Dolphins. Yes, they lost. It was a 12-10 loss, but they played solid football and had a wide receiver not dropped a wide open touchdown pass. They probably win that game 17-12. All right? 17-13 maybe, because the Seahawks just kicked the extra point instead of going for two there. So the Dolphins, I want to see more from them. And finally, the Houston Texans, Brock Osweiler looked good. Lamar Miller handling the rock. I think he had the most touches of any offensive player in week one. So the Houston Texans got a balance with Osweiler throwing the ball and Miller running the football. That's a team to watch out for as well. So that's it. Let's get to it. Week two, I'm going to give you my 16 picks going up against Rico Stone representing the fans. I get to pick the challenge game again. So let's go with week two of the NFL season. Thursday night football, Jets at Buffalo. The New York Jets, 0-1, travel to Buffalo, 0-1, to face the Buffalo Bills. It's an early game, and you know what? I am of the mind that there is no such thing as a must-win game in week two. You don't want to start 0-2. Because history is against you immediately. If you start 0-2, your chances of making the playoffs are 12.5%. Okay, it's not very good. But it can be done. The problem is that the Jets lost a one-point nail-biter. And now they're on the road. They got the Buffalo Bills, another team that was embarrassed week one. They're going to be playing pretty hard. They're at home. It's tough to play in Buffalo. The Jets always have a hard time in Buffalo, and we all know that Rex Ryan will do anything in his power to beat his former team. The other thing about the Bills is they were embarrassed last week. They didn't look good offensively. They're going to work hard to correct all of those mistakes. The Jets at least scored points. They lost by 1 point to Cincinnati. They were in their football game. Buffalo, even though the score was close, they only lost by 6, really got a sense that they really weren't in that football game. I think they'll be a little bit more upset. They'll be a little bit more focused, and they'll make sure they get this division win. Rico says the Jets are steaming after the A.J. Green show paid a timeshare on Revis Island. That's funny. They will bounce back against a fraudulent passing game of the Bills. The Ryan unemployment campaign continues. Jets 28, Bills 17. Ouch! He's got it in for the Jets. All right, this might be a challenge game because I think Buffalo at home will get it done for me. I'll come back to it in a moment. Moving to Sunday, September 18th. The early games. Cincinnati Bengals travel to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, at the beginning of the year, I thought Cincinnati was a shoo-in to win this division, just run away with it. Now I'm not so sure because their defense just did not look clean. They do not look crisp. And Pac-Man Jones returning punts, this is what happened when he returned this one kickoff and he brought it out of the end zone. Almost got decapitated, Pac-Man Jones. And he was talking to Deion Sanders later on NFL Network late after that game. And even Deion's like, man, are you okay? Because it looked like you took a shot. He's like, yeah, I took a shot. Didn't even see it coming. But, yeah, so I think he needs to focus more on the defense front of the ball than returning kicks. But that's neither here nor there. I don't see Cincinnati going into Pittsburgh and getting a win. Not how their defense played last week. If the defense plays the way they played last week against the Jets, Pittsburgh's going to roll them. It's going to be a blowout. I'll just tell you that. If the defense does not come to play, they're going to get blown out. Because if the Jets could run the football on them, did you see what D'Angelo Williams did to the Redskins last week on Monday Night Football? I got Pittsburgh, and so does Rico. Rico says, Bengals versus Steelers. Steelers' offense is lethal. And with Perfect not there to help with the run, expect Antonio Brown to show out. Steelers 35, Bengals 24. I can see the Steelers blowing the Bengals out if this defense doesn't come to play, and they need to come to play. So we both have Pittsburgh. Moving on, the Tennessee Titans at Detroit Lions. We both have the Lions here. Let's see what Rico has to say. The Titans are improving, and the run game is there. However, the Lions have the ability to attack all areas of the field, and Stafford is clearly comfortable enough in the offense to exploit them. Lions 30, Titans 20. For the record, for the rest of you all who get chosen to make picks, you don't have to give me scores. So I'm enjoying reading them. So if you want to, go ahead, but you don't have to. We both have Detroit. I'm with them. Look, Tennessee's young, and they're a year or two away from starting to make some serious noise in this league. Just right now, I think they're too young. I like that Mariota and Sharp have this connection already. Sharp's a rookie wide receiver, and I think he caught like 7 passes last week. It's just not going to be enough. The thing that Tennessee has to correct is the turnovers. Oh, my God, they turned. Every time I looked at that game, it was like, oh, did they just turn over the ball again? They did? Okay. It was another turnover. It was like turnover. They were turnover machines. They can't do that against Detroit. Now they're on the road. Last week they were at home. Detroit's feeling pretty good about themselves. This could be one of those where Detroit feels and looks really good, and then all of a sudden they lose a game that they should win. But we both have Detroit. Baltimore travels to Cleveland. The Browns, it took 1 week to turn the Browns from, hey, they're going to have a pretty good season, to a real smoking hot mess. As a matter of fact, what is the pitch perfect line? It was like if you were like a hot mess and they put you in a bag and they put you in an oven and then they even turned on the heat and made you even a more hot mess. That's what the Cleveland Browns were immediately after week one. Man, I wish I had the clip from that movie to play. Would have been perfect in this situation. Let's just say this about the Cleveland Browns.
It was bad. It had nothing. No fire, no energy, no nothing.
No nothing, okay? So that's why I've got the Baltimore Ravens. Let's see. He's got Ravens 21, Browns 10. Rico says, not sure who the Ravens are yet, but I already know who the Moneyball Browns are. The Moneyball Browns are Deshaun Watson. Watch is on. Yes, Moneyball Browns. Yeah, that's sure you could say that. And Deshaun Watson's quarterback that maybe, you know what? You know, no. You can't have the Browns take another quarterback. No, no. Just hush up. They're going to be all right. Okay, they're not. They're a hot mess. You're right. Anyways, we both have Baltimore in this game.
Dallas travels to our nation capital to face the Washington Redskins. Let's see here. Rico says, despite the mental mistakes by the Cowboys, I am of the belief that Captain Kirk is more ensign than captain. Ooh, doesn't like Kirk Cousins there. Cowboys 17, Redskins 13. Low scoring affair. Sure, I'll give you that. And I'll tell you why. Because this is why, really, the Cowboys lost the game last week. Sure, we can all make fun and yell at Terrence Williams at the end of the game for being a bonehead and not stepping out of bounds. But the problem is Jason Garrett and the offense decided to handcuff Dak Prescott. I think he had two passes in the entire game over 20 yards. You know what, Coach Garrett? No one is going to respect Dak Prescott until you let people see what he can do. Let him throw the ball down the field. That one pass that he threw to Dez Bryant and one of the two deep balls that he threw was perfect. Dez should have hung on to it. Dez, you got to learn that when you're going to the ground, buddy, you got to turn and land on your back, man. You just got to. Enough of these balls slipping out and, you know, always going to the repeat. You've got to learn how to handle your body so that ball just does not come out. That's got to be said, because this is just every week it's like, oh, man, there's another instant replay with Dez Bryant and whether he caught the ball or not. It's just a little crazy. So roll on to your back, Dez. Catch the football, big dog. That's what you got to do. And give a target to your rookie quarterback. Garrett, let him throw the ball. You start completing some of those deep passes. The defense has to loosen up. Ezekiel Elliott can find some running room because he had zero running lanes available to him when he was out there. So let's relook at our offense. I'm tired of this. We're going to go on these 12, 15 play drives and chew up 9 minutes off the clock and get stuck in the 10-yard line because we don't throw the football and we kick a field goal. Field goals aren't going to get it done. They're not going to win in this league. You cannot settle for 4 field goals because you know what? 2 touchdowns is more than 4 field goals. So you could have all those drives and you can have all those field goals, but the opponent only has to score twice if you keep settling for kicks. That's all I'm going to say there. Even that said, he's got the Dallas Cowboys winning 17-13. So am I, because you know what the Washington Redskins did against the Pittsburgh Steelers? Settle for field goals. And the last time these two teams met, it was a bunch of field goals kicked. I'm going to go with Dan Bailey, my field goal kicker, over the Redskins kicker. I'll take Dallas too. We both have the Cowboys there. The New Orleans Saints travel to New York, the Big Apple, to face the New York Giants. He's got the New Orleans Saints. I've got the New York Giants. I don't think the Giants win at home. Plus, I don't think the New Orleans Saints travel very well. Let's see. He says, Giants are lucky to win last week. True. The Saints have more weapons and are used to shootouts. Saints pull out a rare road victory. Yeah, they don't win on the road. So he's got Saints 31, Giants 28. I think the Giants will take care of business and win at home. I don't trust New Orleans anymore. Just can't do it. Just won't do it. Not going to do it. All right, the San Francisco 49ers travel to Carolina to face the Carolina Panthers. And although the 49ers got a win last week, it was against the lowly Rams. I don't think Carolina is going to lose 2 in a row. Let's see what Rico says. 49ers destroyed a clearly underwhelming Rams team, but now travel to the East Coast to face a hungry Cam and the Panthers. Not going to be pretty. Panthers 28, 49ers 10. Yeah, the 49ers might put a little bit more points on the board, but at the end of the day, Carolina still gets the win. We both have the Panthers. Miami at New England. He's got the New England Patriots. He says this about the Pats. Where is he? Rico says, the Dolphins let a game slip away. Thanks, Kenny Stills. There you go. Coming back across the country to face a confident, though shorthanded Patriots team. I like New England. Patriots 24, Dolphins 13. I don't know. I think Miami actually showed a lot of grit last week against the Seattle Seahawks, being on the road, being so far away from home, and only losing by 2. The Patriots used a lot, man. They used a lot to get after that Cardinals team and get that win.
Here we come, a divisional rival. The Dolphins usually play New England. Actually, for the last several years, always play the New England Patriots very tough. I think that Miami needs to show its grit here and get one and win one and take one away from the Patriots. So I'm going to go with Miami there. Rico's got New England. Kansas City at Houston. I'm going to take the Houston Texans at home. They look pretty good around their team, and it looks like Rico's taking the Houstons as well. He says, very exciting win for the Chiefs last week, but I think the Texans have too much speed on both sides of the ball for the Chiefs to handle without Justin Houston. Texans 28, Chiefs 24. I like Houston at home. I think offensively they're going to be a little bit better than I originally gave them credit for. Kansas City got fortunate. I think last week they won because Keenan Allen went down. When Keenan Allen went down, it kind of burst the bubble for the San Diego Chargers because the Chargers were rolling in that football game. Keenan Allen goes down, and it was kind of like the, oh, here we go again, and all the energy was kind of sucked from that team, and they let Kansas City get back into it, and Kansas City wins in overtime. Not going to happen this time. Plus, I think Lamar Miller will get some good runs against Kansas City, and I like Houston. Seattle at Los Angeles. Well, come on. Do I even have to talk about this game? I've got Seattle. What does Rico have? Rico says the Rams are trash. Well, I wouldn't go that far, Rico. Even with a hobbled Russell Wilson, they have nothing that scares the Legion of Doom. Snore of the week. Seahawks 21, Rams 3. Hey, at least they get points. Rico says the Rams get points. So that's good. Hopefully they get more than three. I think they will keep this game close. I don't think Seattle is as dominant, as powerful as they've been in the past. Last week's game is a little indication of that. And, yeah, Russell Wilson does have that bum ankle. We don't even know if Russell's going to play. I know he's saying that he's going to play, but I don't think ultimately that's his decision. But doesn't matter who starts at quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. It'll probably be better than whatever Los Angeles sends out. Maybe we'll see Goff in this game. If it starts becoming a blowout, I do believe Jarrett will get onto the field. I have Seattle. Tampa Bay at Arizona. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers looked really good last week, but they got to travel again, this time to Arizona, almost all the way across the country. Arizona seething that they let that one get away to them against the New England Patriots last week. I'm going to take Arizona. I think that Bruce Arians will have his team ready to go. He says, I like the Cardinals this year, and they were unprepared against the Pats. Winston will keep this interesting, but I will give the Cards the edge as they make amends for last week. Cardinals 28, Bucks 24. I don't know the Bucks score that much. I think the Arizona Cardinals defense is a lot better. I'm telling a lot better than the Atlanta Falcons defense. So I like the Cardinals to kind of keep Winston and the Bucks at bay. We both have Arizona moving to San Diego, where the Jacksonville Jaguars face the Chargers. I'm going to take the San Diego Chargers. I liked what I saw from San Diego prior to Keenan Allen going down. Like I said, I think that injury was something that kind of wounded the team. I think they'll rally around. It's their home opener. Here comes Jacksonville having to go on the road, cross the country. And Jacksonville plays some pretty good football, but I think San Diego will take care of business. Rico, however, likes the Jaguars. He says the loss of Keenan Allen will affect the offense of the Chargers. The Jags are looking to take the next step and get a good road win. Jags 24, Chargers 13. I don't think that Chargers offense is all that inept. Even without Keenan Allen, they've got some pretty good weapons. Danny Woodhead and Melvin Gordon both ran the ball sensationally last week. I look to San Diego win. So there is another game we differ on. Atlanta at Oakland. Like I said, I don't trust Atlanta. Probably won't trust the Falcons for a very long time. I'm taking Oakland. Rico says Matt Ryan has regressed, and it's sad for Julio's talent going to waste. The Raiders will be rocking the black hole in a rout. Raiders 30, Falcons 17. Woo! Wow. That is massive, but I like Oakland, and so does he. The Indianapolis Colts travel to Denver to face the Denver Broncos. Rico says, I feel sorry for Andrew Luck in this game. The Broncos defense will absolutely feast on the Colts O-line. We can only hope that the Colts make it out with no injuries. Broncos 31, Colts 13. Yeah, I've seen Andrew Luck play some really good football in Denver. I would not say that this is something that I think the Broncos are going to blow anybody out like that. So I think it's a closer game. I still like Denver to win. So we both have the Broncos. I just think it's a closer game. The other interesting thing to point out here is that it is the first Indianapolis Colts versus Denver Bronco game in 23 years that does not feature Peyton Manning as a quarterback for one team or the other. How crazy is that? 23 years. We both like Denver. Final game of Sunday night football. The Green Bay Packers travel to Minnesota to face the Vikings. I've got Green Bay. If Teddy Bridgewater is there, I take the Vikings all day. I got to find out when the world happened to Adrian Peterson because he was missing in action. Big MIA last week. I don't know if he gets it going against Green Bay. I'm going to take the Packers. Rico says Packers 24, Vikings 17. Sean Hill, Sam Bradford, it doesn't matter. Neither can shine. Aaron Rodgers' cleats. Rodgers will look to avenge the loss to the Vikings in explosive fashion. Packers 24, Vikings 17. Okay, we both have Green Bay. And finally, Monday Night Football, September 19th in Chicago. Rico says the Eagles might be on to something with Carson Wentz, and Jay Cutler continues to create turnovers that take the air out of his team, out of the team he leads. Sorry, Chicago, maybe next week. Eagles 28, Bears 16. I think it's a lot closer game than that. I think the Chicago Bears are no Carolina Panthers. I'm actually going to take the Chicago Bears at home. This is prime time. The Philadelphia Eagles are riding a little high. I think Chicago will get the better of them. They will clean up a lot of those turnovers, and I expect that Langford is going to run the ball very well. I think Cleveland did pretty good running the football last week, and Philadelphia will, you know, they're on the road now. Let's see how the rookie does on the road. He was at home last week. He was comfortable. He had the home cooking. Everything looked good for him. But now he's on the road, going to be a hostile environment, Monday Night Football, prime time, lights are going to be on. I think it's going to be too big a stage for the Rook. I'm going to take Chicago at home. So that means we have Philadelphia, Chicago as a possibility, Jacksonville at San Diego as a possibility, Miami at New England as a possibility, New Orleans at the Giants, and the New York Jets at Buffalo. He has taken New England at home. Well, I've taken Miami on the road, yet he's taking Philadelphia, Jacksonville, New Orleans, and the Jets on the road. I'm just going to go with Buffalo. I think Buffalo, I have them going deep into the playoffs. That is where I'm going to go with we'll get the challenge game right off the bat. You guys have the Jets. I have Buffalo. Lock it in as your challenge game. Thursday night football. I'm going to take the home team on Thursday night football. That will be the challenge game. And that's it, folks. I'm going to leave you with the final segment for this week, and it is my lock of the week. Every week, I'm going to give you one game and the line that I think you should take and put money on. This week, it is the Thursday night football, so I hope you're listening to it before the Thursday night game when you have time to get a bet in. My pick is the Buffalo Bills. They're getting 2 points at home. They are 2-point dogs at home on a short week against a team that is also over. My philosophy usually is in second week of the season, you see which games have two teams that both lost. In this case, both teams are 0-1. Then you look at who is at home and who's the dog, and you take that team. If it's a home dog, take them. They're going to be motivated. It's a short week, and they're getting points. That means all they have to do is win by a point, or they could lose by a point or two, and you'll still make money on it. That's my lock of the week. Take the Buffalo Bills +2. They'll win it, and it's my challenge game, so you know how confident I'm feeling about it. Take the Buffalo Bills and the +2. That's all the time I've got, people. I've gone over an hour for the first time in a very long time, but I've had lots to talk about today. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda, and I'm out.